So for various reasons, which are way too boring to go into, I didn't get the readings for the service this week. So I emailed yesterday thinking I'd spend some time yesterday afternoon preparing these words. I got a pretty speedy reply, so I looked up the readings, promptly shut the lid of my laptop and said, nope. Went away, spent a few lovely hours chatting to my lovely partner, and hoped, against hope, that something would form in my brain overnight, that I might be able to write something this afternoon. Yes, rather than tackle these two readings that we heard, I decided to give myself far too little time to write these thoughts between the services today, because sometimes preaching is like that. Don't get me wrong, it's not that these are bad readings. They're long, convoluted, deeply bound up in historical and cultural contexts, and may seem irrelevant to us on first or second reading. But they're not bad readings. They're not difficult readings in the sense of the one we had in our service this morning that I really feel I have to address, which many felt very perplexing from 1 Corinthians chapter 6. St. Paul, and it probably was Paul in 1 Corinthians, seemingly with a massive downer on bodies and sex and people generally. Actually, even then, there are contexts and meanings and contradictions which could be unpicked and explain a little of why Paul said and did what he did, and how he says something quite different at other points, even within the same letter, and is in process himself of trying to create something new while still working with old categories and culture in which he was formed. But we as preachers don't always get the opportunity to, or time to address all that the scriptures throw at us week by week. Or we find something so compelling within the alternative Bible passages given, and we don't want to be distracted. But what to do with troublesome passages, which, as David said earlier today, seem to shout fornication at you, like an irate street preacher? Is it possible to tackle them straight on each week, knowing that although we address many difficult passages in the course of any year or three-year cycle, or in the many discussions that we have week by week, or the studies that take place over the course of our common life together, there will still be some who turn up once on a Sunday and hear a reading like we heard earlier, or even hear the letter to the Hebrews that we've just heard and think, what? Well, maybe this stuff isn't for me. Well, I don't have an answer. But we, myself and my colleagues, are acutely aware that these questions, these concerns, are out there, and we're doing what we can. But our scriptures are our scriptures. They do contain moments of wonder, enlightenment, glimpses of the divine, but they are always filtered through culture, both ours now and the cultures and the times and the places where they were written. And when we read those passages or hear those passages in church which shock or disturb or challenge us, and we don't have an immediate interpretation, then I encourage us all to do a little bit of work around it. Read around the passage, do a web search for an online commentary. I recommend Working Preacher from the Lutheran Seminary. They have commentaries on every reading for every Sunday morning. Quite useful in sermon prep some weeks when you're stuck. But that brings me back to our readings for today, for this evening. Are they really as odd and irrelevant as they might seem at first blush? Can they inform our spiritual quest, our questioning, our living in faith? As you might expect, having done this huge build-up, I think they do. Our first reading from Isaiah, for instance, is one of having hope in the midst of despair. The previous two chapters, 58 and 59 in Isaiah, have been pretty doom and gloom. Then all of a sudden we have this promise of rebuilding, a reminder of the divine bursting in to bring new life and greater glory for Israel. It helps if we know that these passages are written to returning exiles who have come back to Israel to find destruction and the aftermath of invasion. They are words which are there to be inspirational, reminding these downtrodden people that the exile is not the end of the story, that the cycles of history do indeed contain war and conquest, empire and domination, but also rebirth and renewal, hope and new life. Words that those of us who are of the church of today could benefit from, perhaps. We are shaken by the past of the church, anxious about the finances and the future. But the church is more than we are today. It's more than this. And it has been through all this before. And for better or worse has come through, sometimes with its integrity intact, sometimes not. The prophet or school of prophets, known as the Isaiah school, are writing from and to this particular context and are speaking a word that people are needing to hear of encouragement. Those words may or may not apply for us today. It's our task to interpret and take them or to leave them as instructive for a previous generation, and I think we can do the former. Likewise, the letter to the Hebrews is very firmly rooted in a context where there is, as of yet, no church and no Christianity, just a variety of Jesus movements wrestling with who they are, how they relate to the Jewish roots of their faith, and the belief that in some ways Jesus of Nazareth is the anointed one of God, and where does that leave the Gentiles, those who are outside of the Jewish way? To do this, the anonymous writer of the Hebrews goes back to the foundational myths of the Jewish people and seeks to weave God's faithfulness then into what they are experiencing now. It's another proclamation of hope that God is and will remain faithful to the promises of being with God's people, the heirs of the promise of God, the promise of a new way of being, a reign of justice, a reign of peace, healing, wholeness, equity, and compassion. Why both of these readings are, I think, relevant to us today is to remind us that this isn't all there is. This church, this society, this world situation is part of a big story. A story that stretches back millennia and with hope will continue on for a little while longer at least. They proclaim that we have work to do. They are not a false or empty hope, but one which require of us to commit to that new life, that new way of being, and to do what we can to make it a reality in partnership with one another and the divine. Pray God it may be so. Amen.